This is The Topic is Trek, episode 25, for Friday, July 27th, 2018. Call Yesterday, Temporal Agents standing by. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, 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 everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And in order to be a co-host, oh, I did a little Shatner there. In order to be a co-host, you must have other hosts. So beaming in to join me, as always, are Mr. Craig Stepp.
I'm a doctor, not a podcaster. Wait. No, wait.
No. And hopefully less confused, Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
Pass the Romulan ale, because Craig obviously drank all the Tranya.
Yeah, baby.
Well, he's back from his cruise to, or his trip to Alaska, so.
Yeah. I'm drunk cold up with, there. I'm drunk with excitement to be back.
Well, we have a very full show for you this week, so we're going to cut out the chatter and go straight to the subspace chatter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
But Charlie, we do. We do need it. As we start out, I want to give a shout out to the folks who are with Star Trek Discovery who were just nominated for Emmys.
Woohoo! Where's our applause?
Yay!
There, I've got it. It's on the next rack.
I like this one better.
The sarcastic clapping. That's what we get.
So the show was nominated for Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup, Series, Limited Series, Movie, or Special for the show's first season finale episode, Will You Take My Hand? And for Outstanding Sound Editing for a Comedy or Drama, 1 hour for the episode, What's Past is Prologue.
Whoa. Those weren't prosthetics.
No, that's for the sound editing.
It says Outstanding Prosthetic Makeup for Will You Take My Hand. Newsflash, those weren't prosthetics.
What?
Those were actual Klingons.
What?
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Well, while we try to explain how television works to Chuck.
Right.
We're going to move along. Matter of fact.
Who Chuck, drank the Tranya?
Yeah.
I just brew it. I don't drink it.
Right. And good news, folks. Chuck has the first story. So here we go.
From comicbook.com, as the report points out, this could cause scheduling problems for some of its stars. Zoe Saldana, who plays Nyota Uhura on Star Trek, also plays, get this, Gamora in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. What? And the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie is expected to begin filming in early 2019 as well.
Chuck, I think the Tranya's kicking in. You skipped the lead of the story and jumped into the second part.
The title is Star Trek 4. New details on production start. I did. I skipped past all the ads and then some. I hate ad-laden sites. They confuse me. New details on production start. Possible filming locations reported revealed. Okay, let's start at the top. Rewind. The first rumor details about the next Star Trek movie are beginning to circulate, including that the film may begin filming in early 2019, but I happen to know there might be a conflict coming.
Yes. Ooh.
Some new specifics about the production have now hit the web. Omega Underground reports that it has confirmed the film will begin production in January, and that London and Atlanta are both being considered for movie's filming location. Oh, January in Atlanta will be okay. They should film it in August in Atlanta.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, as I mentioned there earlier, we're reading this kind of like Yoda out of order.
Yeah, read it from the top, bottom up.
Yoda news. Take a line from the middle and throw it around. The production is also said to be eyeing the Black Panther and the Walking Dead star, Danai Gurira. I hope I said that closely. For one of the two major female characters in the film. But Gurira is also in negotiations to star in Godzilla vs. Kong. Are we throwing back to the 50s now? Which begins filming in early October. Meaning, depending on how long those shoots are said to take, and when she'll be needed, scheduling may keep her out of the Star Trek sequel. Star Trek 4 will reunite the cast that includes, of course, Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, Carl Urban, John Cho, and Simon Pegg. The film is also expected to see Chris Hemsworth reprise his role. What? As George Kirk. I know, you're all probably already aware.
Another spoiler.
Captain James Kirk's father, who died in the opening scene in 2000. What are we going to do, a dream sequence here?
Nobody's ever really dead.
As long as we remember them. And there's a contract.
And there's a wormhole nearby. I don't know. The S.J. Clarkson-directed feature will be the fourth film in what has come to be known as Star Trek's Kelvin Timeline, the alternate timeline caused by the Narada's trip back in time, as seen in 2009 Star Trek. The film was also followed by Star Trek Into Darkness in 2013, and then, of course, Star Trek Beyond in 2016. The fourth Trek film was announced shortly before Star Trek Beyond opens in theaters. However, Paramount went silent on the film for over a year after Star Trek Beyond underperformed the box office.
Yeah, I was upset about
that. Shocking surprise. Paramount saw some leadership changes at the executive level, which we've reported on in this podcast, and reconsidered its box office strategy, and now Star Trek 4 is back on track. Are you excited for Star Trek 4 to begin production? Question mark?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
Who do you think the new characters will be? Another question mark.
Yes!
What role will George Kirk play?
Yes! Yes!
Game show host. Let us know what you think. Call us on our listener line. We have a listener line, right?
No, we don't have a listener line.
I think we're using your super secret line.
Oh, okay. You can call the super secret phone line then. Or you can leave a note on our Facebook page. That might work a lot
better.
That'll
work a lot better. Have we been checking that? Have we been getting any traffic on that?
So anyway, on to our next story.
It would be nice if somebody would.
It would. I'll do it. I'll just post something over there. I'll say, hey, that's a nice article you got there. Yeah, but I posted it myself. Whatever. I'm talking to myself. Never mind. Okay. Let's move on to a follow-up to a story we previously had, and Craig is going to tell us about it.
Yeah, actually, it's more of an update to a story we previously had. Is that what you said?
All right, well, follow-up, update.
There we go. Follow-up. That's a good word for it. Anyway, so is that where I proceed now?
Yes, you just go now. A well-oiled machine.
Yeah. Well, the town of Riverside, Iowa is said to be the birthplace of Captain James T. Kirk, the most iconic hero of the Star Trek franchise.
We're not going
to
do the
whole
thing.
We're all getting our chance to turn.
Yeah, it's my turn. All right, the town recently revealed the new statue of Kirk was supposedly created with William Shatner's blessing, but the Star Trek star disputes that claim.
Whoa, did this on our last show.
Yes. Yeah.
So the Kirk statue was unveiled during Trek Fest 34 celebration at an annual event held at Kirk's hometown. According to a report from MeTV, William Shatner himself approved the statue, which cost $30,000 and to have commissioned. Shatner took Twitter to state that he had nothing to do with it.
What they didn't say in this story is that he was listening to the topic as Trek when he found out the news.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we understand. So as an FYI, in MeTV on this story, I never gave an okay, Shatner tweeted. CBS would have to authorize it, as I don't have that authority. I don't even think it looks like me. If I gave permission, why didn't they send me images of the sculpt to me before it got cast? Good point. sculpture was created. Huh?
I've said indeed.
Yeah, indeed. Fascinating. The sculpture was created by Yurik Yakowitz, an artist located in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, through an idea that came from Riverside Councilman Steve Miller. Not that Steve Miller.
We already did all the songs last time.
That's right. Who has been spearheading the effort to have Riverside officially sanctioned as the birthplace of Captain Kirk since 1985, when he first made contact with Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry.
He made first contact.
Yeah.
Yes. I thought that was, anyway.
That's where Roddenberry went, first contact. Hey, no. Roddenberry, I don't think he had anything to do with that part. Roddenberry is said to have called Miller's idea enterprising. And given his blessing. From there, Miller expanded his idea to include a statue of Kirk in Riverside's Hall Park, one of the community hubs in the city. The Riverside community and Star Trek fans made donations to cover the $30,000 expense. According to the report, Shatner gave his support to Miller's idea and permission to use his likeness after they met in 2004. Shatner clearly disputes this claim. Comicbook.com reached out to CBS to confirm whether the company gave their official blessing on the statue and is waiting response. There you go.
So, there's drama over this statue.
We'll keep you posted.
And you know what? This only serves to bolster the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think we commented at the time when we covered the story last episode that it doesn't look that much like Shatner or... You know, at least the angle that we saw. I think we only got to see it.
At least it wasn't like Lucille Ball.
No.
That statue. Yes.
Is it a potato Shatner?
Yeah, go look for the Lucille Ball statue. You'll find
the old one, not the new one. They have a new one now, but
yeah, they
old
did change it up. But yeah, just search for it. You'll find the picture, and it looks haunting.
And if you're tapping your foot going, hey, I thought the topic was Trek. Well, you don't know your Trek lore. Lucille Ball is extremely important.
Desi Lu. Yes.
Star Trek.
Yeah, because of her, we're here.
That's right.
Talking Trek.
Yeah.
Trash and Trek.
Maybe she should have rethought the whole thing. Anyway.
Hey, good thing she can't hear us now.
Let's call the whole thing off.
So, you may think we've already indulged in this stuff with the next story, but we actually haven't yet. Star Trek vodka contains alcohol from space.
Now, I know from other science stories, there's like nebulae that are made out of ethyl, methyl, alcohol, whatever it is. So
ethyl is from Lucy.
There's alcohol in space. Say, all right, well, I just found a new top in this ad on the for Donna on the Trek Cruise. There's a ThinkGeek ad on the left, right side of my screen.
Focus.
Keep the train going.
All right, Star Trek fans will soon be able to own an alcohol that Captain Jean-Luc Picard himself would put down the Earl Grey for. 10 Forward Vodka, made by Silver Screen Bottling Company and CBS Consumer Products, is created by sending a small batch of the alcohol out into the Earth's mesosphere using a high-altitude balloon. Once the vodka is safely back from its trip to the final frontier, the brand says it will be, quote, carefully protected and blended into the stock of 10 Forward Vodka, ensuring that a portion of every bottle will contain vodka from space.
So it's homeopathic vodka.
You know, this reminds me of one of the, we went fishing in Alaska, and just follow me along for a second. So we're on fishing and the captain's talking. He says, you know, they have a 1% rule here in Alaska. As long as whatever you're talking about, as long as 1% of it is true, you can't be arrested for it. So they dip a little vodka in there somewhere, however many parts there is that you get in your bottle. Hey, you know, it's true.
Well, I pre-ordered a bottle, so I'll let you know whether it tastes like
did
space.
You?
Did
you? Okay.
I did indeed. And the story mentions that the graphics were, I let this quote, the graphics were designed by a guy named Michael Okuda.
Oh, no.
The guy says, he has some serious cred in the Star Trek community, I guess. Jeez, I don't know.
Funny is we're making fun of him. It's probably some other Michael Okuda.
No, it's not some other Michael Okuda. Yeah, so the bottle is very nice. It's very elegant. And it has definitely a Star Trek The Next Generation look to it, thanks to Mr. Okuda.
Elkhart thing going on here.
Yeah, but it won't be. I think it doesn't ship until sometime in September. So
they should have put, don't drink and fly.
Yeah, don't drink and don't drink in suborbit or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Obey actually, your I didn't impulse. Even think.
Is it going to be here in time for
the cruise?
Dragon Con?
No.
No, not Dragon Con.
No, the cruise, but I don't. Anyway, we'll talk about that offline.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can take alcohol onto the cruise.
Yeah. No. But while I throw back some vodka, our next story is going to involve a throwback of a different kind.
Oh, thank goodness. I got a second chance to redeem myself on this show.
Start in the middle, work your way to the ends.
Blow it.
You want to do that again?
No. That
was kind of fun. From TrekCore.com, additional Mego, Star Trek retro figures are revealed. Ooh. Long closed toy company Mego is returning to business this month. How does that work? And as we reported last week, they're bringing their 1970s style Star Trek action figure toys back to the market as well. We already showed you their new Lieutenant Sulu figure earlier this week, and today the company has announced the rest of the classic Trek characters that will be a part of the first wave of retro figures hitting Target stores. I thought for a moment it was going to be Toys R Us.
That might be a little tough.
Long-closed Mego is selling to long new closed. Captain Kirk in his Mirror Universe uniform. Mirror Spock and Ensign Chekov. Mirror Universe Star Trek, the bridge crew from the one of the most, there's a picture of them, very lovely. You know, these are truly retro figures. I mean, they've got the hinged arms and the wrists, and the clothes look kind of bad. It looks more like they threw camo on Kirk. He's got the Desert Storm look going. More article. These first three Star Trek releases will be available exclusively at Target stores in the United States beginning July 29th, which is a mere few days after we record this. So, yes, you can go out and get them by the time you hear this. Where they will be in limited quantity of 10,000 units each. Oh, my goodness. You know, Spock looks like Spock. Sulu looks like a repurposed G.I. Joe, and Kirk, he doesn't look like the right head is on the figure at all.
No, the heads are a little big, but I think, as I recall, that's pretty much the way the Mego figures always were.
Yeah, that's what makes them look like Mego. The Sulu and Chekov, Sulu and Chekov figures would be priced at $19.99. What did they sell for in the 70s? Wasn't it like $250?
Well, that's a lot of inflation since then.
Yeah, so. And Star Trek's popular now.
Yeah. Hey, wait.
Well,
popular. Well, where you been?
It was.
You're fired, Chuck.
It was languishing in the early 70s. People were looking for this stuff. We have the internet now. That's how we get this podcast out. Let's see. Well, the Mirror Universe 2-pack will sell for $29.99. Additional figures from the Mego Star Trek line will follow in October and November of this year. Alrighty.
I love these things.
Toys, Christmas presents. I know what's on my list. I like how the phaser and communicator are blue.
Baby powder blue. Yeah, and all of the equipment's made out of the same material.
Yeah. Kirk's mirror dagger is like four times too big.
Yeah. And he's wearing it in a very dangerous position, like just jammed into the sash right by his chest. I don't think that's a good
idea.
Hey,
sit down, Spock, real quick.
Yeah, Spock's is dangerous too.
Well, and if you want to see these photos,
that's not where Vulcans keep their junk, you know.
Oh, that's it.
Careful.
It's over here.
Not everyone keeps their genitalia in the same place.
If you want to see photos of what we're talking about, and maybe you don't, I don't know, you can go over to thetopicistrek.com and look for the show notes for episode 25. We'll have a list of all these stories here with links, and you can click through and see where Spock and Kirk are keeping daggers.
25. Does that mean our next show is our 1-year anniversary-ish?
Approximately-ish. Okay. I guess so-ish.
It was end of July, early August, was it not? That first show was a little rough. We didn't even have Craig on board.
What?
No, you missed.
Now things are as smooth as glass.
Right. Broken glass.
Yeah.
All right, speaking of Mirror Spock, this has nothing to do with that. This has to do with Kelvin Timeline Spock.
Yes, and a very outspoken actor, as well as like Simon Pegg, Zachary Quinto has been talking about Star Trek, the upcoming movie projects that they got, what, two of them floating around. Yep. And talking today, USA Today, excuse me, Quinto was asked what he knew about the new Star Trek films. Yet again, they ask him that all the time. In development, and specifically about one pitched by and potentially directed by Quentin Tarantino. The actor again indicated that he would be involved in the Tarantino project and seems to have confirmed reports that it would be an R rating, saying, quote, we're waiting on specifics. I'm thrilled that we might have the opportunity to work with him and see what he would do with us in this universe.
Be careful what you wish for.
It's going to be an R-rated version of Star Trek, which would be of course a first in the movies, and that's exciting. In I guess any of the movies, and that's I started to say franchise, but and that's exciting. I've been a fan of his for years, and I really inspired by his originality. Take that originality and mix it in a world of full, incredible ideology and colorful characters, and the result would be pretty thrilling. And see, Tarantino Trek my last time. Oh, when asked by USA Today how long he sees himself playing the role of Spock, the answer implied he may retire his ears after the fifth film. Actually, I think it's pretty good Spock, but I don't know. I'm honored to be carrying the mantle of the character. So as long as we have fun and the stories are interesting, I'm open to it. If we make a fourth one and then we do a film with Quentin, that feels like an incredible, complete experience. But you know what? If his agent gets a deal, I think he might.
Well, it's also a case of what is it with playing Spock and going, I think I'm done now. Oh, I'm back again. Oh, I think I'm done now. Oh, I'm back again.
Yeah. So Quentin's going to come out with a book that says, I'm not Spock.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not the son of Spock.
I'm not Spock 2.
I want to see Leonard Nimoy reprise his role as Spock, or somebody could just do bad lip reading where he says, you know, it's the relationship that will define you both. He could just say, it's the role that will define your career.
Mm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Hey, by the way, I know we're at the end of our stories, but I'm just going to throw this out here and I'm going to put a link in the show notes for everybody to go check out. But I watched, I didn't have time to stick it in the show notes or I didn't think about it. The Tested YouTube channel, which is Adam Savage's channel.
Yes.
They were at Comic-Con, and they were talking to a company, Corbin FX, and they have a license for Discovery, and they have a beautiful, beautiful Enterprise, like we saw in the last 2 seconds of the last season. And they have also a beautiful Discovery model. Now, they're not cheap, but I would recommend at least go and look into the video.
I think we have that in the stories. We didn't get a chance to. It's a Novos.
I didn't read those because we didn't have a time to.
$9,000 Star Trek Discovery USS Enterprise replica.
It is beautiful. What's cool about these is that they used the original plans and built the models, but some of the pieces actually come off. So to
you
give
can
you.
See- Visard collectors.
Yeah, that's right. So you can see, like,
it's a fan.
It's got the nacelles a little bit on the disco and stuff like that. It's really cool.
All right. Well, so you
can see
be
Lorca's
able to,
hot tub.
Yeah. Well, is where the fortune cookies are made.
Yeah.
You can check out all those additional stories that we didn't have time for, even though we kind of had time for that one there. When you go to show notes for the Topic is Trek episode 25 over at thetopicistrek.com. And now we're back from subspace chatter. Insert special effect here.
We're coming back slowly, really slowly. Yep, here we come.
There's I was nothing. Doing my Bullwinkle sound effect.
Captain, there's nothing to latch onto. Yeah.
Scotty, now would be a good time to stop.
We'll call
oh, my.
Day.
All right.
Wow.
We're very excited to have a new feature on this week's episode. It's a book review. We've talked about doing a book review since we started the show, but this time around, we actually have one from Mr. Craig Stepp. Craig, what do you got for us?
Actually, I've been done reading this book since I've talked about it on the show last time. I said, I'm going to do a book review. And I keep forgetting to put it in the show notes to bring it up.
I did a book review. I did, well, they were audio books, but I did two of them.
Okay. Well, that's audio book reviews. The different section. All right. So I read the book Desperate Hours by David Mack. And this book, it's a Star Trek book, obviously. And it came out right after the premiere of Disco, Star Trek Disco. So if you read it in that context, it kind of gives some things a new light, especially when you think about those first two premiere episodes. So it's set 1 year before the Vulcan Hello. Michael had just been made first officer, and it kind of sets up some of the dynamic between Saru and Michael, where they're kind of a little bit abrasive, a little bit, picking on each other kind of thing. So you'll get some of that. You'll get some of that backstory in the book. You get a deeper insight in the relationship, not just between Michael and Saru, but also Giorgio. And Giorgio really shows her depth and her ability to make some command decisions and make things happen. And there's a reason why the Enterprise shows up yet again, but it shows up and it's actually a part of the story, but it's a small part. It's not the driving force of the episode or the book. So Christopher Pike's on there, and Christopher Pike and Giorgio go head to head a little bit. And you can really see that she's really draws her out as a strong female character that can go toe to toe with Pike and come up on the winning side on that, which is really cool. There's a planetary threat that's the reason the Enterprise comes in, and they've got their orders. Giorgio has her orders and her direction, her directive in her head, what needs to happen. And of course she's got Michael yelling at her, hey, you got to do, you should do this, you do that, so, it kind of, it really sets up the relationships that you see in the stories, on the show. And I liked it because it was, as with a lot of the novels, you get to go a little deeper in some of the characters you don't necessarily see much of on screen. Like they actually talked about I can't remember the name, the Daft Punk looking character on the first couple episodes. Right. They talk about her and why she's wearing the helmet. So cool. You get a little bit of backstory on that. You get a little bit of backstory on Pike, a little bit. Face off between Pike and Giorgio. I'm looking at my notes here. And as for Saru, he's paired with number one from the Enterprise, Commander Una. And they get to hang out on a little subplot to the whole story on the planet. No. I actually, Saru thought about it.
What?
he considered it. He says, anyway, I'll let you read all that. Anyway, they get along really good. And you find out more about Commander Una because she describes, I'm trying not to spoil anything. So if I'm sounding a little vague, if there's a reason, I don't want to ruin it for anybody. But anyway, Una gives some backstory on her. So, cause she wasn't really fleshed out in the cage.
Right.
So you get a little bit more on her. And then of course with Saru, you get some more insight and some of his motivations, why he is and how he's approaching the situation that him and Una are coming up. So anyway, like I said, it's kind of vague, but I really enjoyed this dive in this book. I like the books from what I stated earlier some of the books, because you get a little bit more background on some of the characters you don't normally see on screen because screen time obviously is limited. So, I would definitely recommend it. I enjoyed it and I thought it was really cool.
So, question for you, since we are going to be talking about this in a minute anyway, for the season two of Discovery, the Enterprise shows up, as we know, with the with the Discovery. And there's this whole thing with Spock is on board. Now, you've talked about Number One, and you've talked about Pike, and Burnham is there, but Spock is not there?
Okay. I'm trying not to spoil it, but yes, he is there. So, okay.
All right.
So there is, part of the other it's not subplot, it's part of the plot, but it's a section where, like I said, Saru and Una go off by themselves. Michael and Spock go off by themselves. Okay. And she sets it up because she knows that he's a Vulcan and he's not going to really, he's just going to approach it without having to build a relationship with somebody. So she knows that, hey, this is Spock. We can work together and work out this problem because we're limited on time. So she does work it out. Her and Spock go together. And it's kind of weird that when I was reading it, and Spock mentioned that he didn't mention anything about her being her sister to Pike or any relationship. He said that Michael was like a friend of the family kind of thing. It was like an associate of the family. And I was like, wow, he just really glazed over that quick. It's just, he minimized her big time, which I'm sure that'll come out.
This is the same guy that, the first time he mentions his parents, he mentions them in the past tense.
Yeah. Well, that's so true. And he never mentioned his other brother either.
That's right.
So yeah, it's funny, guys. I read it. I went, wow, he just totally did not say anything. And I kind of expected that because you never hear about Michael Burnham until Discovery comes along. Right. Anyway, you get them talking, and you can see her frustration trying to talk to him and back and forth. And they're making some chit chat to make a little headway in their relationship. I think Vulcan bonding, if you can read through that a little bit, because she can be emotional and she can also be non-emotional about certain things,
Okay.
So cool. Anyway, yes, they do get together and hang.
All right. Very good. So once again, that's Desperate Hours.
Desperate Hours by David Mack. And you can find it online and stuff. I think I had it on my Kindle. I actually read it instead of listened to it, Chuck.
But I'm sure there's an audio version of it as well. If there is. That's more what you,
if you have to drive 600 miles, Craig.
Just do like everybody else and look at it on your phone, while you're driving.
While you're driving. No, the Topic is Trek does not condone that unless you're in a self-driving car.
That was the sound of my self-driving car.
Yeah. So again, I was trying to be a little vague because I didn't want to give everything away. And I don't think I did, but yeah, I would say go check it out. I enjoy reading these books. I guess I said before the books that have William Shatner's name on them, that were about Kirk and stuff. There were several right in a row that were really good. Like as a Spectre, and I'm trying to remember the titles now. I read them years ago, but those were really good to go read. Do y'all read any Star Trek books?
I haven't read a Star Trek book in ages. I used to read them, but I haven't read one in quite a long time.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them.
Oh yes. And I think they have I think they were announcing some new titles. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's one of the things that was announced fairly recently.
Well, there is actually three Discovery books. I'm trying to remember if the third one's actually out, but there was at least two now.
Yeah, I think we mentioned those on the show.
Yeah, go back and find it, everybody.
That's right. Don't worry. Go to Amazon, look for the first book, and say people who bought this book also, and you'll find them all. So. Don't worry about it.
Right.
All right. So thank you very much for that book review. Our very first book review. Book review.
Did you read it in hard copy or was it an ebook, Craig?
It said it's Kindle.
Okay. So it's not really a book.
All right. Our first Kindle ebook. Anyway.
I used my pad to read it.
You're going to rip me on an audio book. Then I'm going to rip you on an ebook.
All righty, gentlemen. Don't make me transport you out of here.
I didn't want to use the fossil fuels to go buy a dead tree to read.
We're going to get spaced.
Is the Lord of the Rings best when it's from a tree that has the ring? Anyway, let's never mind that and come back from the book review. And it's time to head out on our main mission.
Wait, I'm just picturing a Lord of the Rings book made out of an ant. Somebody walks up and goes, hey, my book walked off.
Slowly.
Yeah, very slowly.
Who walked off with my book?
And why has it got a beard?
What we are going to talk about this time is San Diego Comic-Con and all the stuff that happened at the panel.
One of these days, I might make it over there.
I've been there once. Once was enough. It's extremely crowded. It's a fun time, but you spend a lot of time waiting in lines. Matter of fact, the panel was held in Hall H, which is one of the larger rooms at the convention. And the line was so long you snake outside the building. Some of the Star Trek Discovery crew brought around the cast, brought around donuts and foam Spock hands and stuff to people waiting at the end of the line. Now, when you go there, think about a line. The person at the front of the line, yeah, they're going to be in the front, but they've been there for hours. The people at the back of the line, they might have been there for 10 minutes.
I hadn't thought about that. I'm like, hey, good for the people at the end because they're going to get the crummy seats. But you're right. The person at the beginning of the line probably lined up last week.
Yeah.
All right. So the we talk about the panel. The people on the panel this time around were Alex Kurtzman and Heather Caden, as well as actors Sonequa Martin-Green, Doug Jones, Shahad Latif, Mary Wiseman, Anthony Rapp, Wilson Cruz, Mary Chifo, and Anson Mount, who portrays Captain Pike in season 2. And Tig Notaro moderated the panel, and she's playing the part of Reno, chief engineer on another starship. We know the name of the starship, but whether or not she finds herself transferred to the Discovery or something at some point, that's unclear. They didn't, since she was moderating, she really didn't talk very much about herself, although she did quote a line that she did in one of the episodes. And I could see her look over at Alex Kurtzman and go, is it okay if I actually do this? And he went, yeah, sure, whatever. I think he thought it's so out of context. No one's going to understand what's going on.
So, where's my peanut butter?
Yeah. These pretzels are making me thirsty. Now,
Somebody ate my lunch out of the fridge, the ship fridge.
We found out was that the season 2 will not premiere. I said January, but I think it's just all they said was 2019. I'm not even sure they said January, but it won't, season 2 won't drop until 2019. Perhaps they said January on that. But we get a little bit of a teaser, if you will, because beginning in the fall, so I think this is going to be September, October, November, and December, one per month, they're going to drop 10 to 15 minute long little mini stories that they call, I think they're calling them mini tracks or something like that.
Track shorts.
So there will be a total of 4 of these. And we found out that one of the stories is going to involve Harry Mudd and is going to be directed by Rainn Wilson. We don't know whether this is before Discovery, after he goes back with Stella. We're not sure where that takes place. The next one will be, or another one will be, Aldous Hodge from the show Leverage playing a human on board a deserted ship. And the story is written by Pulitzer Prize winning author Michael Chambon. And I thought that was interesting that Alex Kurtzman and the other producer were talking about the fact that they're getting a lot of people interested in writing for Trek. And this is one example of that. So that's always good to hear. We have another story that's about Saru's backstory, and then one that involves Tilly and her friendship with an unlikely partner on board Discovery. Who that is, I don't know. So the details are very small in what's going on with these, but it's nice at least that they're giving us something when the show is not going to premiere until 2019.
Seems so far away, but it's only like 6 months.
Yeah, but still, you know, you expect shows to come on in the fall.
Yep.
And it won't be there. They're citing the fact that there's so much post-production that goes into the show, although they're still filming because the way he phrased it, and I know that they had a stop in production after the fifth episode. They referred to that as just a planned a hiatus in there during the filming. Mm-hmm. So they're back filming now because Anson Mount during the panel talked about going on the set as if it's something that had just happened in episode 6. So they're just starting back up with the filming, it seems like, at this point. So the fact that it's not going to premiere until January begins to, or early 2019 begins to make some sense there that, well, they're actually working on the thing and then they have to do all the post-production on it.
You know, I hope that they don't break the season in half next year since we have to wait so long.
They didn't say whether or not that was going to happen. I feel like the break last time around was, well, I think they actually said it, that the break was because they were running out of episode. They knew they were going to just barely squeak by to get those mm-hmm. ready in time and needed a break to finish up on post-production. So hopefully this time around, with the experience of what happened the last time, and they do have, what is it, 2 less episodes to do? Because they think mm-hmm. it's 13. That they've scheduled it so that they can complete everything in time to just do this at once. They didn't say specifically, but I think we're still going to get it week to week rather than binge on it. I'm surprised nobody actually asked that question, but I think that that's the model that they're going with, and I don't see them changing it for any reason.
Hmm.
Keeps you subscribed to CBS All Access.
Indeed. Yeah.
Right.
Kurtzman says that with regards to how Discovery fits into canon, he assured the audience that you will get a lot of answers this season, guaranteed. You're just not going to get them the way you expect them.
In ebook form?
Yeah. Audiobook, actually. No.
Yes.
I don't even know what that means, and no one called that out either. You would think that.
Whoa, Kurtzman, I wasn't expecting this at all.
Because they
an email.
They had questions and answers. You'd think somebody's going, what do you mean? Well, how is that supposed to? Well, if I told you, you'd expect it, I guess, would be his answer.
It's on the CBS All Access podcast network. You got to subscribe to that, too.
Indeed. And there's a mail order element of it as well. So we're just going to try to hit everything.
Right.
We did find out that we will see Spock in season 2. We later found out after the panel that the role has already been cast, but we don't know who is portraying Spock.
Hmm.
And it's unclear whether or not this is the casting of Spock that Jonathan Frakes was referring to when he kind of spilled the beans that you're going to see a young Spock in the season. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's the same episode, you know, are we going to see a young Spock in a flashback and then Spock on board, you know, the Enterprise or wherever they go? Apparently he's not on the Enterprise when they get there, that he's gone off someplace.
Yeah. And the trailer said he took a leave.
Yeah. So we will see him at some point and we can assume it's an adult.
Yeah. At the end of the whole season. All right, we got him back on the Enterprise. See you later. Thanks for your help.
Well, when we talk about that another thing that happened post-panel was that somebody was talking with Anson Mount about the Pike character, and he's contracted for the entire 13 mm-hmm. episodes.
Yeah. Hmm.
I mean, we all thought that this, oh, the Enterprise is going to show up. They're going to have a little thing that goes on and then it's going to take off again. It sounds like, no, this story arc all season.
Yeah, so he's on the Discovery the whole time.
Right. And the Enterprise is, I'm sure, involved with the mission, but, you know, I don't know. We did find out that we will be seeing Number One as well in this, and that role has been given to Rebecca Romijn, who you may remember from the X-Men.
Noodles. Oh, I'm sorry.
No. Oh, dear me.
What did he say?
That's ramen. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Romijn is the lettuce. Yes.
Let us keep going.
Please. We lost Craig again. He's lost us.
And again, we don't know how often we'll see Number One. Will she come over onto the Discovery as well? Will we be cutting back and forth with her on the Enterprise?
I just told you she had a little relationship with Saru.
Yes, that's right.
Not that kind of relationship, but yes, they have a relationship.
We'll also be seeing Laurel again this coming season, and she's struggling a bit dealing with the Klingon with the Klingon patriarchy, even though she has her finger on the trigger there to blow up the entire planet if she wanted to.
Do it.
I dare you. A double dog dare you.
Mary Chiefel says that we'll learn about secrets Laurel has been keeping from everyone, including Tyler.
Mm.
Maybe that means that she's a human that's been made to look like a Klingon.
She's going to rip her mask off like a Scooby-Doo.
Someone brought the bomb that she dropped in Kronos on vacation over to Praxis, and that's what happened in Star Trek VI.
It teleported over there. Ah, very clever. Very clever. Wilson Cruz was on the panel, and he said, "I'm not here just because I want to say hi," although he did then say hi, but Culber will be back in season two, but we have no clue how this is going to happen and what capacity this is going to happen. Although Anthony Rapp gave some hints that the mycelial network was involved.
Hey, now, Wilson was in a interview and he said, no, it's not a ghost and it's not a flashback.
And those were two things that people, especially the flashback, people were thinking, well, you know, that's how it's going to, well, okay. So this is interesting.
He might just get to visit him in the mycelial network on weekends.
Who else is? Oh, Tilly is going to stay focused on one day captaining a starship, but she says Tilly's going to struggle and stumble a bit this season. Mm-hmm. So the Wonder Child apparently is going to have some issues going on. We also found out that completely out of context, I think it was Tig Notaro was talking about the fact that Tilly has to crawl her way out of a sticky cocoon at one point this season.
Mm.
Now, I wonder, does that have anything to do with the little thing that landed on Tilly's shoulder? Is that somehow
I forgot about
morphing
her
into something? And no one asked about that either. Doug Jones spoke about going to Saru's homeworld.
Is an amusement park opening up in Disney?
Yeah. Saru World. Kelpians.
Kelpian World. Come on in and run for your life.
Shamu.
Yeah.
And he also hinted that we may have to reconsider who is hunter and who is prey on his home planet as a result of what we see on the Kelpian home world.
I'm sorry. I got this vision of, instead of Mickey Mouse here, you know, like you put on your head.
Threat
like
ganglia.
Threat ganglia. You put on your head.
They come out every time somebody charges you for another thing at the park.
Yeah, it's just a little paint to put on your head. Yeah.
How much for these cookies?
$10.
Dad's threat ganglia is kicking in. okay. I'm reeling
back
in. Have
you had enough fun without Craig?
No.
The whole amusement park idea. 5 minutes later.
It'll be back at Kelpie World in a few minutes.
There's also the run for your life ride, you know, or You're the prey. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Anyway, so Anthony Rapp says we're going to get some red shirt fun this season. Since we've got red shirts in season two, I think we can read into this what happens to some of the crew members on the Enterprise. And asked if we would see Prime Lorca in this next season or ever, Alex Kurtzman said, maybe.
Yeah.
Thanks. We'll see. Thanks so much. I don't know if you guys had a chance to watch the video of the panel. If you had any additional thoughts about what got revealed or covered or talked about.
I didn't watch the panel, but I did read also they were explaining the discrepancy between the Enterprise uniforms and Discovery. You know, where they had the yellow, the colorful ones on Enterprise, and they got the blue ones with the different gold on Discovery. Uh-huh. And it has to do with uniforms for flagships or the Constitution class, type ships rather as opposed to other style ships. So I don't know why they would have different uniforms, but that's what they're explaining, that the Constitution class has their style and the Discovery class. Or what is Discovery? It was
Crossfield class.
Yeah. So those have their own and yeah.
But the same uniform is worn by the people on other ships the Discovery style uniform we saw, like the Admiral and so forth, they're wearing the same style of uniform as Discovery is wearing. Well, so I think they're trying to retro that in there. But
yeah,
okay, well, we'll take it.
Like, I think of, I was thinking more like in Star Trek Continues at the very end when he has the white and gray, Kirk has the white and gray uniform and he says, you'll be getting yours. You know, it's like, you know, cause they're rolling out some new threads throughout Starfleet. That's what I was like, okay, maybe these are the color ones and they'll start making their way through the rest of Starfleet. And we obviously know they do at some point.
So, yeah, I think that would be an interesting progression as the seasons go along to kind of keep introducing more and more of that type of thing in there, which I think they hinted in the first season they were going to be doing that as the show went along. So this is maybe the first example of it. Post the Discovery panel, the people from TrekMovie.com had a chance to speak with Kurtzman and Caden, and they talked about the new role that Alex Kurtzman has as kind of in charge of the Star Trek television universe at this point. And he revealed a couple of things. He said they want to take their time building out this universe. As we know, they talked about having additional series, an animated series, all those types of things, that they want to bend, not break the franchise in formats that we haven't seen for a while. And one example of that is these mini episodes that we're going to be getting before Discovery starts season two.
You're going to get some new formats, like we're bringing back the 45.
Yes. No, it's going to, it's 78s. You really want to go
retro. Formats that you won't expect.
Thank you, Alex Kurtzman.
I'm looking forward to the animation.
Well, they said animation is a conversation at this point.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, that would be interesting to see. I'd be looking forward to that.
We also speculated when we were talking about this announcement about Kurtzman that, if you want to expand this out, we can see some of these shows like the Starfleet Academy, if that ends up being a concept that they use, maybe that could go to, say, the CW. But he said all the live-action shows will be part of CBS All Access, which makes sense. But it's also interesting that he said all the live-action shows. Mm. Now, if they do animated, does that hint that it won't be?
Or maybe Netflix or Hulu?
Yeah, so, you know, because they had mentioned that they were talking about animation, so the word animation had come up already, and he then said live action shows would be CBS All Access.
That'd be cool.
So it might come out in a way you're not expecting.
Yeah. I would be down for, I could see from a business perspective, if they put a little bit of Star Trek over here, a little bit of Star Trek over here, I'm saying like Netflix and Hulu and other outlets, even on television, but the main meat is on CBS All Access. That's where you're going to come to watch the show. So it would all kind of feed on itself, and they're going to make money anyhow by these outlets. So I can only see where if they did something like that and spread their cast their net, wide, I think they would do well for that. Now I would appreciate it without having to, everything be behind the CBS wall.
Well, I think that there is, I can understand the logic of All Access wanting all the stuff to be there because people paying for CBS All Access want more content and put it all there. But at the same time, yes, if you're only preaching to the converted by only having the product on CBS All Access, you've missed everybody else.
Yes.
And only by word of mouth or so forth are other people going to know about it. It's not going to be really out there for everybody to see. So if you had something that was on Netflix or Amazon or whatever, yes, it would allow people a new entrance.
Yeah, some more exposure.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's one of the things they have in mind for the animated series. I don't know. But that is all the information that we're going to cover right now about what happened at San Diego Comic-Con. We'll probably come back to some of these subjects later on as we get closer to season two and get excited about those new mini episodes coming out. But yes, it's time now to come back from our main mission. One button. That's all it takes to come back from our main mission. Amazing.
Yeah.
And it's time now for a Warp Speed Roundtable.
But somebody fixed that thing.
I did. You should have heard it before I fixed it.
Here we go. I got it. Much better. Okay.
The brakes are seamless on that.
Ensign Lynch was making crepes on the warp core again.
Tried shoving a wiener in the warp drive.
Whoa.
I'm sure you know what you're doing there. So, our question this week is, if you could choose anyone to be the voice of the computer on the Discovery, who would it be?
Oh, you go first, Quentin. Tough question.
You go first, Quentin.
Okay, I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
I have three.
Three.
I picked three.
Okay.
I'm allowed.
So are we allowed to choose from your three? How does this work?
No, you have to come up with your own.
No, I mean, can we vote on your three?
Yeah, you can vote on my three.
Okay.
I'm still going to say them.
Let's hear the candidates.
Okay. So my choices for voices of the computer on
this
Discovery.
This can't be worse than the last U.S. election.
Donald Trump.
No. Are Christopher Walken. Imagine the voice of the computer is Christopher Walken. My second choice would be.
I think we're going to need more cowbell.
Yeah. My second choice would be the brain from Pinky and the Brain.
Oh, that's a good one.
And my third, just because I think it would be hilarious, would be Droopy Dog.
I don't know.
Going to warp, sir.
Computing.
So, those are my...
I like it.
Choices.
I like it.
Who wants to go next?
Go, right. Chuck.
Oh, me? Okay. Mine's a toss-up. I couldn't decide between Morgan Freeman, who I thought would just be awesome in everything he does anyway. His voiceovers are a work of God. Or Gilbert Gottfried.
Yeah, well, Talk about opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Exactly. I'm shooting for Mirror Universe one way or the other. You go to the Mirror Universe, you get, are you sure you really want to push that button? What do you got, Craig?
Okay. I've actually got four, but I will. Should I just stick it to three?
No, go for it.
Okay. My first choice would be Pee Wee Herman.
he was invited the Navigator as the voice of a computer, so he's got experience already.
Yeah. Robin Williams as Mork.
Okay.
Ron Perlman. I thought that his voice would be pretty good for a computer.
Now, is this Ron Perlman Hellboy, Ron Perlman Beast from Beauty and the Beast? What kind of Ron Perlman are we talking here?
Let's be honest. They all sound the same.
Okay. You got me.
And my last choice was Betty White.
Oh. Well, she'll still be around when Discovery actually takes place. So,
right,
yeah. And a runner-up was Gilbert Gottfried, but
yeah,
I have a feeling that they would just crash the ship, and be done with that.
Yeah,
he's my Mirror Universe. You really gotta think that through.
I've had enough of this computer. Self-destruct. Alpha Alpha 002. Destruct.
But we're gonna put the question out to you people as well, listener of the topic is Trek. Ding. Who would you choose from anyone to be the voice of the computer on the Discovery? You can leave a note over on our Facebook page and tell us who you think you'd like to have.
We should probably ask it on the Facebook page so we get what responses.
About, we what shall.
If it was, what if it was Patrick Stewart?
Let's wrap this up, shall we?
That's exactly what it would sound like.
Can you imagine Patrick Stewart as the voice of the computer on Discovery?
That would be ironic. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Well, it was, wasn't Marina Sirtis the voice of the computer on the last few episodes of Star Trek Continues, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So there you go. There's a precedent for that.
I could listen to her all day.
Well, that makes sense because, you know, if Majel Barrett was the voice of the computer, and that's her mom, so, you know, the next series in the line would be, okay.
See. Yeah.
Computer, read me War and Peace.
Marcel Marceau. That's who should be the voice of the computer.
I think it would go something like this. And perfect. All right, there we go. On that note, that silent note, it's time that we've come to the end of the show. So we're going to refill the dilithium chamber and get out of here. I'd like to remind you that you can find...
We're filling the dilithium chamber with rabid tribbles, apparently.
My goodness. Remind you that you can find me, Clinton, at ComedyForecast.com or on Twitter at Comedy Forecast or Facebook Comedy Forecast, generally Comedy Forecast. And how about you guys?
Just search for Comedy Forecast. I mean, Technorama Podcast, and you'll find us.
Right.
And do you want to throw out another plug for Dog Days? Oh,
yes. Thank you for reminding me. Don't forget, if you want to listen or if you want to participate, and the Dog Days of Podcasting, which is a challenge for all the podcasters to podcast once a day for 30 days through the month of August. So if you want to listen, great. If you want to participate, come along and sign up. Just go to the website, dogdaysofpodcasting.com, and you can do it all there.
Excellent. Excellent. Hit the theme, boys.
Hey, by the way, I just thought, Paul Lynn, that's another good one.
Really, is it? Is it really? If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
Nanu, nanu.
kids, these days.